Hello and welcome to DeveloPod, the podcast from the Teacher Development Special Interest Group of IATEFL. My name is James Taylor and I'm very glad to have you here with me today. On this episode, I will be speaking to Colm Downes. The reason I wanted to speak to Colm is because of his and my shared interest in the climate crisis. Now, this episode is part of our ongoing series of interviews based around the theme of the future of teacher development. And it seems to me that if you're going to talk about the future of, well, any subject, the climate crisis really has to be something that you discuss. ELT is no exception. So Colm, I thought, was the man to have this conversation with. He's been involved in education, specifically language education, for over 25 years across Europe, the Middle East and East Asia. And recently, from 2019 to September 2022, he served as the Director of English Education and Society for the British Council in Indonesia and was the British Council Global Technical Lead for Climate Action in Language Education. In this role, he developed a wide range of interconnected global innovations designed to train teachers how to integrate the climate crisis into English language teaching. These innovations included a 10-part podcast series called The Climate Connection, a new professional development MOOC called Climate Action in Language Education, as well as video resources and a new publication with 30 climate-themed activities. Colm is currently working on a range of projects as a freelance consultant for a variety of clients, including the British Council, English Score, and the World Bank. So let's go over now to my interview with Colm Downes. So Colm, let's kick things off by asking you about your passion for this subject. Where did that come from?
That's a good question to start with. I have been in English language teaching for over 20 years. And I think I would say, you know, first of all, I'm sort of mainly passionate about education and its role in sort of reducing inequality and tackling big global issues. And I have been an English teacher and a course book writer. And I've done quite a lot of different niche areas across the ELT kind of field. And I particularly, I would say, maybe I first developed an interest in business English, and then that led to legal English. I ended up in Brussels for a couple of years teaching people at the European Commission and European Parliament, quite specific vocabulary for their jobs. I ended up actually working in Turkey and countries close to the EU and around how they could negotiate a closer relationship with Europe, and possibly even join Europe. And I think at that time, I sort of found out a lot more about ESP, English for Specific Purposes, and CLIL, Content Language Integrated Learning. And those have been two kind of areas that I'm particularly interested in and remain very interested in. I would say, I think when we're teaching English, and I thought this for a long time, students are not just learning language skills, which may well be the primary objective of a lesson, but they're also learning, you know, about the content of that lesson, and they're developing skills. And I think all of those things are very interesting to me, whether they're implicit or explicit. And I think recently, very recently, the climate crisis has become like the biggest global issue that we face. And so, you know, my expertise is in ELT. So I think a lot about how to integrate the climate crisis into my area of work, my passion.
Yeah.
I think that's what I would say.
Okay, so can you give me an example of how you applied this thinking of wanting to integrate the climate crisis into your own work?
Yeah. Well, I've got a few examples across different ESP areas. I mean, I did a lot of work relatively recently trying to integrate peacekeeping skills into English for military peacekeepers. But on climate, I remember I was very lucky. I've written one book that's been published for Cambridge University Press. It's a long time ago now, 15 years ago, but it's still in print, called Cambridge English for Job Hunting. And it was really interesting. When I wrote that book, and when I had two editors that gave feedback, we were thinking about maybe having some real companies in the book, having a candidate apply for responding to a real job advert at a real company, to try to make the material more authentic-like. And we debated, which job advert, which company to feature. And I remember I had quite strong views that I wanted to choose a positive, a company that did good in the world. And we ended up choosing a company called Futera, still a company that specializes in communication around sustainability issues. Mm. And, the focus of the lesson was, it had nothing to do really with sustainability and the environment. The focus of the lesson was writing a CV and a cover letter in response to a job advert.
Yeah.
I thought it was very interesting that, at the same time, people who would go through that lesson would learn about sustainability because they would have to understand the job advert. So,
yes.
And then I, to be honest, that back in 2008, I didn't focus explicitly on climate change or the climate change crisis until really about 2 or 3 years ago. And now I recognize that what I did then with the editors at Cambridge, perhaps is something that we could consciously be doing much more of regularly in course books, whether they're global or local or our own materials.
Yeah, so this thinking has been with you for a while, clearly. Let's zoom out for a bit. What role do you think education has in general in terms of solving these issues of the climate crisis, or at least attempting to help solve the issues of the climate crisis?
That's great. I think what I wanted to say here, James, is that obviously now I'm a freelance consultant, and I do projects for the British Council. I do projects for various different companies and organizations. But a couple of years ago, I'm still based in Jakarta, where I've been for sort of on and off for 10 years. And most recently, I was managing our English programs here for the British Council. And in the run-up to COP26, I was very lucky in that I was asked by the British Council to take on a role as what we called the technical lead for climate action in language education. And it was a kind of new role to support colleagues globally in sort of designing and developing a number of innovations, mainly focused on teacher development and training teachers how to integrate environmental issues into the classroom. And I think we're going to talk about some of those later on today. But
yeah,
in order to do that well, I and colleagues kind of had to educate ourselves a lot more around that very question you just asked. What's the role of education in solving the climate crisis? And I read some reports of, what do the experts say? And these are experts that are not necessarily ELT. Well, they're not ELT experts. These are experts in education and climate change. And there's a growing number of these experts. They would say that there's not enough of them. But the big kind of the main things that they would say, and this applies to like all schools, all universities, education systems, and every subject, actually, which we could maybe come on to later on, like why English teaching. But the big messages are around two key words. One is mitigation. So just to explain this for a minute, mitigating the climate crisis. So this is trying to stop the negatives effect. Stop so many, so much CO2 basically, and other harmful gases being released into the environment, which is gradually heating up the planet. Because if the planet heats up, more than 1.5 or 2 degrees, and certainly if it goes beyond 2 degrees, then the world is going to have these catastrophic kind of impacts within the next 100 years. Really, really kind of end of the world. Kind of scenarios, even though it feels gradual to us. So the first thing is to talk about mitigation. And mitigation is kind of what individuals can do, but also what governments can do, what companies can do, what can we all do to stop or to limit this increase in temperature. And then the second, but and that's very important. And the second area, which is, you know, possibly as important, but often not focused on, is around what experts call adaptation. And what we mean by adaptation is that even if we all do our best and temperatures don't rise so dramatically, they're still going to rise and the world is going to change. And the fact that the world is going to change, and we see it already with lots of storms and floods and more natural disasters, is that the world's going to be quite a different place to live in, and it's going to require people to change and develop new skills for new jobs. And so adaptation is part of that kind of role of education in preparing people for this future that we're going to be moving towards.
So those are the wider responsibilities that, well, education has, because education, of course, is not separate from society. It's a fundamental part of society. And so those are how education can interact with this crucial issue. So then what about English language education specifically? Are there areas where you feel that as ELT professionals, we have a particular focus or strength or something that we can do in particular?
Yes, sure. I think the English language education has a responsibility and opportunity to play a major role in tackling the climate crisis. Just going back for a second to the earlier point about mitigation and adaptation, a lot of experts have said that actually education is key in tackling the climate crisis, right? And getting people to change behaviors and getting governments to change. It's almost like fundamental. It's like one of these, they have these things called tipping points. And education is seen as like, basically, if the world is not well educated about mitigation and adaptation, then they're not going to understand climate, you know, change. They're not going to understand why these floods are happening. They're not going to protest and demand or elect leaders that will make the right policies. They're not going to stop corporations from being polluting rivers and so on. But going on to your question, and you'll have to interrupt me a few times here because I've got a lot to say, but English language education, right, where do I start? Well, first of all, like, it doesn't feel like we're in a crisis, but we're in a crisis. And Greta Thunberg and others have said, like, in a crisis, everybody needs to kind of stop what they're doing and just say, we need to focus on this because this is the number one kind of risk that we're all going to face moving forwards, and our children and our children's children. And as I said earlier, most education experts and climate change education experts have very clearly said, and governments have signed up to this, that climate change education shouldn't be something that is just limited to being addressed in science lessons, but it's something that should be integrated into all subjects at all levels of education. So that includes language education, because there's many different ways of approaching it and many different aspects to the climate crisis. As I said earlier about adaptation, our role, we're teachers, what we do is we prepare students for the future to go into the world, you know, equipped with language skills, but maybe also equipped with green skills or transferable skills or and environmental awareness and climate responsibility, you know. So, you know, part of our job is to equip people for the future. There's a great quote, and one of the things that informed me or inspired me when I was preparing for my work with the British Council, there's an essay by an academic called Rosalind Appleby, and she wrote, I think this essay is in a British Council publication called English Across the Fracture Lines, and it's freely available. You can Google it and download it. And in that publication, she focuses on the role of English language and the climate crisis. And she says all those in English language education need to consider how we might contribute to building a safer and more sustainable world, and how English language students, wherever they may be, might be encouraged to analyze, understand, and act on environmental problems. And I, that quote, you know, I was one of those people that needed to reflect and start thinking about it. And then I think there's, obviously there's other things around English. We'll come to the pros and cons, but English is a global subject, right? It's our audience is global, if you like. Yes. The most widely spoken language in the world. You know, it's estimated that there's 1.5 billion people learning English worldwide. The majority of those learners are using an ELT course book. There's other academics that have said, you know, this fact basically represents an ideal forum for bringing in a focus on environmental issues and problems. English teachers...
Yeah, makes a lot of sense.
And one of the other things is that possibly more than nearly any other teacher in a school, you know, English teachers have quite a lot of freedom over what the topic of the lesson is going to be about. You know, all subject lessons cover some form of content, but ELT teachers often have more freedom over that content than other subject teachers. Provides a very good opportunity. Just to say a couple more things, I think, and other people have talked, it's not just about, you know, maybe together with our students, better understanding the climate crisis. I think for me, it's more than that. It's about empowering students to become sort of change agents and to sort of meaningfully participate. And that means that whether they have the language skills to meaningfully participate in the dialogue globally, they can critically engage, understand climate issues and promote local or global solutions, or whether it's more practical kind of projects in their school or community.
It also occurs to me that I might even take a stronger line in saying that, you know, if we accept that this is a crisis, I don't think we actually have the luxury of deciding whether or not we want to participate or not in this, right? It's really our duty, individually and as a community, and as a profession, to be part of this. You know, we don't have the luxury of being able to say, oh, we'll leave this for the science teachers, right? Because I don't think anyone has that luxury. No one in society should be saying, I'm going to leave this to other people. We all have to be playing a role, whatever that may be.
No, I totally agree. And it's a collective action. You know, nobody individually is going to solve the climate crisis either. Some people have got probably more power to make a bigger impact than others. But it's like Greta Thunberg was somebody who just started standing outside her school with a cardboard, you know, sign, and you can see where she is now. I mean, collectively, we all can make a very, very big difference. I want to go back to what I said about course books, because there are risks and there are problems here as well. Like, and I'm going to refer to other people's work, and I want to acknowledge nearly everything I'm saying today, actually, are things that I've read or things that I've learned from others. It's a collection of advice and that, you know, or wisdom that I'm passing on and I want to share. But there's this fantastic eco-linguist. I think he's more than an eco-linguist, but there's this guy who, you know, academics know, maybe not, he's not very well known by English teachers, called Aaron Stibbe. Apologies for getting if I've mispronounced the name, but Aaron Stibbe or Stib, he I'm going to quote this as well. He has talked about the potential sort of harmful impact of ELT course books. I'll just read this. It says, because of the wide readership, you know, around the world, everybody's learning English, course books can also spread harmful Western-centric discourses in relation to environmental issues, acting as a, quote, a Trojan horse for spreading the values such as consumerism, neoliberalism, and progress that led to environmental destruction in the first place. And he's got a fantastic website that he's got. I think it's called storieswelivebuy.org.uk, where he talks about the need for us all to become, you know, more environmentally responsible, including publishers and anybody who writes materials and this kind of content, to look at it and say, you know, what explicitly or implicitly, what messages are we kind of passing on to our learners, you know, in this lesson?
So how good a job do you think LT is actually doing with this topic?
For two and a half years, I was, you know, working for the British Council, kind of looking at this very carefully. I worked quite a lot with the founders of ELT Footprint. I think many of your listeners will be familiar with ELT Footprint. They're a sort of Facebook group with over 4,000 members now. And there's also Climate Action ELT in the UK, which has regular webinars. Talking to mainly Christopher Graham and Daniel Barber, Kerry and Kath from ELT Footprint and others, we were kind of looking at this question, saying, well, how well is the sector doing? Chris was the first person to me when he talked about ELT and its responsibility towards the climate crisis. He very neatly kind of separated it into two areas. He said, on the one hand, there is kind of looking at the ELT sector as an industry, if you like, looking at the responsibility of publishers in terms of, you know, how course books are made. You know, are they sourcing, you know, trees from sustainable forests for their paper? And yeah, what about exam providers when they ship their exams around the world, paper-based exams for people to complete? You know, what's the carbon footprint? He raises, him and founder of Green Action ELT raise difficult questions about the whole, often to the UK, the industry, you know, people flying from around the world, maybe for like a 1 week or 2 week intensive face-to-face course at a language school in the UK. Obviously, we strongly support language school businesses, but there's interesting discussions about sector globally and what action the sector can do. And on that side, I think there are definitely steps being made, and these steps are often business related, right? Because, you know, they're business considerations. Yeah. And increasingly, it's becoming an advantage to be environmentally responsible for your business. Whether you offset your emissions or that you can confidently kind of show your consumers or your customers, you know, what you're doing to be, you know, environmentally sort of conscious. I think there's still work to be done. I think English UK have come up with a guidebook for, certainly for language schools in the UK, but could be read by anybody, of action that the sector can take. So there's a whole, that's one area. I'm not an expert, to be honest, in those areas, like green schools, maybe accreditation points for schools that are more energy efficient. Okay, there's a company that does that as well. But the area I'm most interested in is going back to the area almost of like the power and the opportunity that teachers have with their learners and the content that they use. And I think on that, actually, a lot of progress is being made by mainstream publishers. I think, again, gradually they're seeing more of a business opportunity, right? Because it's becoming more of a sellable topic in certain markets, like National Geographic. I think most of the main publishers I have noticed a concerted effort towards having some more green content But whether or not it goes far enough and whether it's still environment really hasn't got those kind of things that Aaron Stibbe would talk out about, consumerism and neoliberalism and other things, it's still very much debatable, and they can still do having a very a green audit. And at a local level, there's a lot of, I mean, although teachers rely on course books, most teachers around the world use course books that are like mandated by ministries of education. And obviously it's country by country. There's great work being done, I think, led by people in New York, where you are, James, where there are experts that are kind of looking at Ministry of Education's action as a whole and trying to score them, because obviously governments already agree. Nobody disputes climate change education, right? They all say it's fantastic. Paris Agreement, you know, all these COP summits. Prime ministers, presidents all sign off and say, oh yes, but it's the implementation of it and actually is it happening, and then trickling down to ELT, is it happening? I think we're in the very early stages, to be honest, and I think there's a long way to go, and there are some people and I probably position myself tentatively in this side, who would say, maybe I'm an optimist here as well, there are some people who believe quite strongly that within about 5 years, sustainability will become the central pillar of all kind of curriculums across, you know, subjects, including language education. So, you know, course books may be built around all of these different green topics, and, you know, English language will still be the primary objective, but, you know, content, environmental content and green skills will become kind of central to the curriculum. So there's some way to go.
There is. So if teachers are listening to this, Com, what would you say to them? What if they are perhaps, as I am, frustrated by the slow pace of change, what can they take upon themselves to do something about this?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I can imagine, and I work with teachers all the time, and, you know, teachers will say, well, a couple of things. They'll say, why me? I'm just an English teacher. Well, I hope I've answered some of those. Why me? I'm just an English teacher.
Absolutely.
That's half of this interview. And then they think, well, what can I? Some of them might be, I don't know anything about climate change. I'm not an expert, so I'm a bit scared to tackle this. And I understand, you know, completely their fears in that. The first thing I would say, I think one of the good things about being an English teacher is that you are an English teacher first and foremost. That's your expertise. You don't have to be an expert in something you're not, and you should be honest about that. And you can tell your students, you say, look, I'm not an expert in this. You know, let's learn about this together, or you educate me, you find out something and bring it into class. As a teacher, you have this, as an English language teacher, you have this fantastic opportunity to facilitate the lesson, or even sometimes empower your students to facilitate. But you're, I like the word facilitate, so I like to see myself as a facilitator of learning, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, I think it does help your confidence if you learn more about the topic. You know, that goes without saying. I'm not saying you have to become an expert. So I would encourage all teachers to try to develop your own, what is called environmental and, you know, climate literacy, you know, by reading more about the climate crisis, you know, finding out what the words like mitigation and adaptation or rewilding climate justice, you know, all of these kind of these terms and expressions that you see often in the newspapers these days or on social media, you know, developing your own climate environmental literacy, but along with your students. So the first tip I would say is you don't have to be an expert. The second tip I would say is, however, do build up your vocabulary and learn a bit more about it and share it. And then a couple more tips. some sort of quick ones. This is a great one. Again, I got some of these tips. There's a one guy in I think he's in the UK now, but he's still running ELT Sustainable. His name's Owen Llewellyn, and him and a guy called Ben Crompton, they both run ELT Sustainable, and they have courses for teachers. And in one of their webinars, they talked about, well, two things. One was they talked about avoiding the polar bear problem. And often in course books, when climate change comes up, you know, you see a picture of a polar bear in, you know, melting, ice caps melting. And the reason they say avoid the polar bear problem, what the point they're trying to say is that for most students, you know, the Arctic, although polar bears are lovely, and I, you know, care about them greatly, it's a long, I'm in Indonesia, there's no ice, there's no snow. No students in Indonesia really care very much about or worry about melting ice caps because it's not relatable. It's too far away. So their advice is, when you have an environmental topic, and this is one of the problems or the challenges with, you know, the international course books, is the need for personalization and contextualization of materials. So, you know, the question is always finding out, you know, what are the environmental issues that will engage your students, that your students are passionate about, that are local to their school, community, their city.
Yeah.
And having lessons where students can talk about those. And the linked to that, about making things relatable and memorable, another area where I think publishers are beginning to make progress but could still make more progress is in using more human images. There's a company called Climate Visuals, actually, which have had a campaign where they managed to get newspapers to stop, you know, using these kind of big pictures of forest fires, because they found that actually that doesn't really engage people very much. It's, again, very
abstract. Well, I guess it becomes a cliche, doesn't it? And then once it becomes a cliche, then it becomes very easy to disassociate from that, and just, it doesn't really mean anything anymore, right?
Yeah, we become numb to it almost. Even a picture of a wind turbine. I've been guilty of it myself. I've produced a podcast series for the British Council, and a lot of the advertisements had these like beautiful images of a wind turbine in the sun. But apparently, not really. I mean, it's been proven that the use of sort of human stories and human images is much more, you know, impactful. So a quick question I would say to your listeners, if you were going to use an image tomorrow with your students, a human image about the climate crisis in your community, your town, you know, what image would you choose and select, or what image would you ask your students to bring one? And I guess the last couple of points would be around, again, trying to tackle some of the concerns that teachers might have. There is a real thing called eco-anxiety, right? So students are worried about the climate crisis, and they should be, because it's, you know, it's happening, and maybe some of them are more aware of their futures and the, you know, the impact than some of the older generation. And some teachers will say, oh, I don't want to bring this up in class because, you know, I don't want to induce, you know, more fear and anxiety among my students. I think there's two ways to kind of deal with that. One is to say that one of the reasons there's eco-anxiety is because there's so much misinformation and disinformation, and it's confusing. And students don't necessarily know who to trust or what to trust, especially in this world, you know, the era that we live in, with all this kind of lots of loud voices on Twitter and social media, even on TikTok, where, you know, school and teachers are statistically, you know, seen as very trustworthy sources. So I think it is important that, you know, when you teach something, you know, you're confident of your facts. And that can be reassuring for students that, you know, you can be a source of accurate information. But secondly, whilst we got to be honest, and I would be honest with my students, to talk about the urgency of the climate crisis. The other really good thing that we can do to tackle eco anxiety and make a difference is to focus on positive stories and success and climate projects around the world, whether they're small or large. You know, what can be done? Like, focus on solutions as much as, you know, end of the world scenarios. Let's focus on innovations and action. And that is going to motivate students and make them, you know, I hope, you know, it will. And I've seen through experiments in Indonesia and elsewhere where, you know, where teachers have tried to encourage their students to get involved in climate action projects, the reaction has been very positive and enthusiastic. So those are some sort of, well, some, I think some are more immediate than others. But these are all sort of things that teachers could do. And it goes back to what Rosalind Appleby was saying, maybe in that quote from her essay in English Across the Fracture Lines. I think all of us just need to consider what role we can play. And it will be, whatever your job is, whether you're a publisher or a teacher trainer, or a teacher in a primary or in a university, you know, it's going to be your response and your reaction is going to be different depending on your own situation.
So I think that's a perfect place for us to wrap up, Colm. I just want to finish by saying a quote which I read, which says that the biggest impact we can make is at the level of the communities we are members of. And for most people, a significant community is our place of work and wider professional network. So I hope that's what we've been able to achieve today, right? Because by having this conversation, which I believe is the most important conversation of our time, that we are able to bring it to our community, our professional network, and hopefully people can take this forward into their own networks, and we can continue to make that progress that we desperately need to make.
Absolutely. I think going back to one of the things we said earlier about everybody needs to think about what they can do, individually, at home, and at work. And one of the things that, you know, most people, you know, probably have a limited number of other people that they could inspire or influence or educate. But we're teachers. Teachers have that fantastic opportunity to, you know, you've got all of your learners and then the other teachers in your school or in your community. And some of these communities are now global because they're online. So you can, if there's nobody passionate about climate change education in your school, you can probably join ELT Footprint or another group online, and you're not alone, and you're part of a global community that's taking action.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So thank you very much for joining us, Colm. That was a fantastic interview, and I really appreciate you being here.
Thanks a lot, James. I loved it.
I want to say a big thank you to Colm for that interview. I hope you found it as fascinating as I did. I'm going to include links in the episode description if you want to find out more about some of the things that Colm mentioned, including a link to the Climate Action in Language Education MOOC. So that's it from this episode of DeveloPod. Please stay in touch with us by following TDSIG on social media. You can find us on Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and Threads. And we're there, if you just search for ITEFL TDSIG, you'll be able to keep up to date with us. Make sure you hit subscribe on whichever podcast platform you're listening to this episode, so the next episode will appear right there in your feed. Thank you for listening. My name is James Taylor, and we'll see you next time on DeveloPod.